Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Amdocs Q4 2016 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Matthew Smith, Head of Investor Relations. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Crystal. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effect of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6-K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2015, filed on December 10, 2015, and our Form 6-K furnished for the first quarter of fiscal 2016 on February 16, 2016, our Form 6-K furnished for the second quarter of fiscal 2016 on May 17, 2016, and our Form 6-K furnished for the third quarter of fiscal 2016 on August 8, 2016. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Additionally, we are pleased to mention that our analyst and investor briefing will be held on Wednesday, December the 14th, at the Nasdaq MarketSite headquarters in New York City. Please contact Investor Relations for further details and check our Investor Relations website several days in advance for details on how to access the live webcast. Participating on the call with me today are Eli Gellman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Dagim, Chief Financial Officer. With that, I'll turn it over to Eli.
Thank you, Matt, and good afternoon to everyone joining us on the call today. I am pleased to report solid quarter four results consistent with our expectations and which included progress on several important dimensions. We strengthened our relationship with some of the world's largest service providers, including Vodafone, América Móvil, and Telefónica. We expanded our digital offering with a combined acquisition of Pontis, Brightbill, and Vindicia, and we delivered on our commitment to return 100% of free cash flow to shareholders in the second half of the fiscal year. As you may remember, fiscal 2016 began in a challenging fashion, but we delivered a stronger second half with profitability at the high end of our target range. This performance was similar to our prediction at the start of the year and translated to full-year diluted non-GAAP earnings per share growth of 5.6%. Now, let me provide some color on our regional activity in fiscal 2016 with the emphasis of our fourth quarter performance. Beginning with North America, quarter four showed further signs of stabilization as we supported AT&T and other customers in various strategic initiatives. For instance, during the quarter, we extended a long-standing managed services agreement with a flagship prepaid brand of a major U.S. carrier for an additional 3 years. Regarding our outlook in North America, many of the uncertainties created by the market consolidation activity of the last few years began to resolve in fiscal 2016 and benefited Amdocs. While this is translating to the modernization of opportunities such as those we are seeing in the pay TV industry, the broader market dynamics are continuing to shift rapidly, which may lead to a new wave of industry consolidation. For instance, AT&T's proposed merger with Time Warner and Verizon's bid for Yahoo represent the convergence of communication, media, and entertainment and promises to create a new level of competition among service providers. Historically, this type of M&A activity has created long-term opportunity for Amdocs, as well as better outcome for consumers. That said, we remind you that a merger such as this naturally takes many months to complete and are subject to intense regulatory review, which may delay the discretionary spending discussions of our customers in further quarters, in future quarters. Additionally, our outlook remains subject to future corporate consolidation activity among North American service providers, the outcome of which are difficult to predict. Moving to Europe, we closed out a successful year of growth consistent with our outlook at the start of the fiscal 2016. During quarter four, Vodafone Spain selected Amdocs to consolidate customer relationship management, CRM, and operation support system, OSS, across its mobile and cable operations. This follows our earlier awards with Vodafone in Ireland, India, and Germany, and is further evidence of the value we provide to the Vodafone Group. Regarding the outlook in Europe, the work in backlog and the pipeline of opportunities points to moderate growth in fiscal 2017, although we expect the pace to be difficult to predict within the context of the regional macro, political, and foreign currency conditions, which we assume will remain challenging over the next 12 months. In rest of the world, we delivered another record year in which we continue to expand activities with strategically important customers. Demonstrating our continued growth relationship with America Mobile, Amdocs signed a three-year agreement to provide Amdocs network trial services to improve mobile network performance for America Mobile service providers in 9 countries, including Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Colombia, Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, and Costa Rica. Similarly, Telefonica selected the Amdocs Data Hub for Vivo in Brazil, which expands the scope of the Quad Play transformation project we announced earlier. Quarter four was also productive in Southeast Asia. XL Axiata, a leading mobile service provider in Indonesia, deployed the Amdocs Mastered Enterprise Catalog to speed up time to market. And in a separate project, an innovative solution for dynamic quota allocation to deliver better video experience. Meanwhile, Globe Telecom of the Philippines selected Amdocs Revenue Guard for automated, analytics-driven revenue assurance, a service that is built on market-leading technology developed by Cividia, which we acquired in January 2016. Looking ahead, the pipeline of opportunities continues to support positive revenue trajectory. We therefore expect the rest of the world to remain a growth engine for Amdocs in fiscal 2017, although we continue to believe that Southeast Asia will grow faster than Latin America and that the overall growth rate will moderate relative to the pace of the previous 2 years. Additionally, we remind you that quarterly trends may exhibit lumpiness due to the project orientation of our customer activities in the rest of the world. Now, before we discuss the financial aspect of FY17, I want to emphasize 2 key points. First, we continue to use M&A as a strategic vehicle to sustain long-term growth. For example, our recent acquisitions of Pontis, Vindicia, and Brightbill extend our digital offering on 7 dimensions and can be run alongside or as an enhancement to existing solutions and capabilities. Post-merger integration of these acquisitions commenced immediately upon closing, and we are encouraged by the early level of sales engagement we are seeing across Amdocs' much wider customer base. Looking ahead, we retain significant capacity to execute additional M&A, which we intend to do as we find the right deals which will fit our strategy at the appropriate time. Second, as a result of our high win rate in the last few years, we are now progressing a record number of transformation projects toward production on behalf of our customers. As we have said before, projects such as these are naturally challenging and often come with profitability below the corporate leverage. That said, they provide the foundation of which we can bring continuous value to customers through sustainable long-term relationship. In other words, projects are the real future muscles of Amdocs. Turning to our fiscal 2017 financial outlook, we are targeting a diluted non-GAAP earnings per share growth of 4.5% to 8.5% by utilizing the various levers at our disposal. Specifically, I want to call out four of them. First, we expect total revenue growth within the range of roughly 2% to 6%. This outlook is supported by our record high 12-month backlog, which is by itself a reflection of our high win rate in recent years and our unique business model. Second, we expect operating margins to be within an improved range of 16.4 to 17.4 in fiscal 2017, the midpoint of which is about 20 basis points higher than the midpoint of our prior range. This outlook reflects our goal to maintain and improve margins over the long term, which is achievable as a result of our consistent project execution and our ongoing commitment to internal efficiency improvements. Third, we are committed to proactive and disciplined allocation of our free cash flow as a mechanism to enhance overall return to our shareholders. Over the past 4 years, we have returned a majority of our free cash flow in the form of our share repurchase and quarterly dividend program. We expect to maintain a fairly similar approach in fiscal 2017, subject to factors like the outlook for M&A, financial markets, and prevailing industry conditions. Fourth, to further enhance the total return to shareholders we expect to provide in fiscal 2017, we are pleased to announce a proposed increase in our quarterly cash dividend of nearly 13% to 22 cents per share. This dividend increase, which is subject to shareholders' approval at the annual general shareholders meeting in January, demonstrates our confidence in the future success of Amdocs and is consistent with our objective of delivering a dependable income stream to our shareholders. As a final but highly important point, we remain highly focused on building the engines that will sustain our growth and strong competitive position for the years to come. These engines primarily include digital modernization, the enterprise customer segment, cable and pay TV, especially in North America but also around the world, and network function virtualization. While some of these engines are immediate, others are long-term in nature and will contribute more significant growth in fiscal 2018 and beyond. To learn more about these four important growth engines, as well as our updated business outlook, please join us at our formal Analyst and Investor Day on Wednesday, December 14th, which we will host in the NASDAQ market site headquarters in New York City's Midtown. With that, I will turn over the call to Tamar.
Thank you, Eli. Fourth fiscal quarter revenue of $941 million was at the midpoint of our guidance range of $920 million to $960 million. Foreign currency movements negatively affected revenue by approximately $2 million relative to the third fiscal quarter of 2016, as we predicted in our guidance. Additionally, there was a negligible contribution to revenue from the combined acquisitions of Pontis, Brightbill, and Vindicia, all three of which closed on September 14, 2016. As an added point of disclosure, AT&T accounted for 33% of total revenue for the full fiscal year 2016, compared with 34% in fiscal 2015. We remind you that our revenue from AT&T included a full year of activities with DirecTV in fiscal 2016, as compared with a partial year in fiscal 2015. Our fourth fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 17.1%, a decrease of 10 basis points compared to the third fiscal quarter of 2016, but towards the high end of our long-term target range of 16.2 to 17.2%. Below the operating line, non-GAAP net interest and other income was $0.6 million in Q4, primarily reflecting foreign exchange movements. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect a non-GAAP net interest and other expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was 89 cents in Q4, 1 cent above the midpoint of our guidance range of 85 to 91 cents. Our non-GAAP effective tax rate of 18.2 in Q4 was above the high end of the annual target range of 13 to 16%, consistent with our guidance. For the full fiscal year 2016, our non-GAAP effective tax rate was 15.2%, which was within our expected annual range. Diluted GAAP EPS was 64 cents for the fourth fiscal quarter, below our guidance range of $0.66 to $0.74 due to acquisition-related costs in connection with the acquisitions of Pontus, Vindicia, and Brightwell. Free cash flow was $125 million in Q4. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $153 million, less $28 million in net capital expenditures and other. DSO was 79 days, increased by 7 days quarter over quarter, and was primarily attributable to the timing of project invoicing milestones and the completion of previously mentioned M&A activity, which occurred towards the end of the fourth quarter. Total unbilled receivables increased by $23 million as compared to the third fiscal quarter of 2016. At the same time, our total deferred revenue, both short-term and long-term, increased by $22 million sequentially in Q4. The net movement in unbilled receivables and total deferred revenue reflects timing differences between revenue recognition and the invoicing of customers during the fourth fiscal quarter. Our cash balance at the end of the fourth fiscal quarter was approximately $1.1 billion, though net of short-term debt it was $0.9 billion. We drew down $200 million on our credit facility in Q4 for short-term funding purposes, and the balance has since been fully repaid. Our 12-month backlog, which includes anticipated revenue related to contracts, estimated revenue for managed services contracts, letters of intent, maintenance, and estimated going support activities, was $3.017 billion at the end of the fourth fiscal quarter, up $60 million sequentially from the end of the prior quarter. Roughly half of the sequential increase in backlog was due to a consolidation of Pontus, Brightwell, and Vindicia. During the fourth fiscal quarter, we repurchased $90 million of our ordinary shares, $90 million of our ordinary shares, under our current authorization of $750 million. We had $597 million remaining under the authorization as of September 30. Now, turning to our outlook, we expect revenue to be within a range of $935 million to $975 million for the first fiscal quarter of 2017. Embedded within this guidance, we anticipate the marginal sequential impacts from foreign currency fluctuations as compared to Q4. For the full fiscal year 2017, we expect total revenue growth to be within a range of roughly 2% to 6% on constant currency basis and reported basis, relative to exchange rates prevailing at the end of our fourth quarter fiscal 2016. This outlook incorporates growth from the sale of our customer experience solutions, including recent acquisitions, of between 3% and 7%, minus a drag of about 1% from directory, which we anticipate will continue to decline in fiscal 2017. Additionally, sequential trends may exhibit some lumpiness owing to factors such as the project orientation of our customer activities in Europe and rest of the world, and the business profiles of the recently completed M&A. As Eli discussed, we anticipate our non-GAAP operating margin for fiscal 2017 to be within an improved target range of 16.4 to 17.4%. Additionally, we expect our quarterly non-GAAP operating margin will fluctuate on the higher end of this range in fiscal 2017. We expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be within a new target range of 13 to 17% for the full fiscal year 2017. This range is 1% wider on the high end compared with our previous guidance of 13 to 16. We believe a wider range is appropriate due to growing economic and political pressures in many jurisdictions and from multinational organizations such as the OECD to increase the tax revenue. With respect to Q1, we expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be above the high end of our new target range, 13 to 17. We expect the first fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be in the range of 87 to 93 cents. Our first fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 149 million shares and the likelihood of a negative impact from foreign exchange fluctuations in non-GAAP net interest and other expense. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the first fiscal quarter, as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. For the full fiscal year, we expect to deliver diluted non-GAAP EPS growth of 4.5% to 8.5%. Our full-year EPS outlook does factor in expected repurchase activity over the year. As Ellie indicated earlier, we plan to return a majority of our free cash flow to shareholders through our ongoing share repurchases and dividend program in fiscal year 2017. Finally, we expect the total return we deliver to shareholders will be enhanced beyond the earnings growth outlook by our dividend program, which, if the new quarterly dividend rate is approved by shareholders at the annual meeting in January, would yield about 1.5% on the current share price. Therefore, in fiscal 2017, we expect the sum of our diluted non-GAAP EPS growth plus the dividend yield to equate to a total shareholder return in the mid to high single digits. As a reminder, future changes in the dividend program will be subject to periodic review and will be tied to the underlying growth rate of our business and overall capital requirements. With that, we can turn the call back to the operator and begin our question and answers.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star and then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star and then one now. And our first question comes from Tom Roderick from Stifel. Your line is open.
Yes. Hi, Matt Van Vliet on for Tom this afternoon. Thanks for taking the question. I guess first looking at the three acquisitions you made late in the quarter, curious what impact you expect that to have on the 2017 results and how that is already sort of progressing in some of your sales flow in terms of add-on sales to existing customers.
So as we indicated when we announced those deals in mid-September, we expect the contribution to revenue growth this year to be 1.5 to 2% from those three deals. And in terms of the overall activity we're seeing with customers, very good feedback. We are already seeing in the sales channels a couple of very interesting opportunities on all three of the deals. So it's definitely fitting in right within our digital support to customers as we expected when we concluded those deals. Anything you want to add?
Sorry.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, and then I guess following up on the 2017 operating margin guidance, obviously a little bit higher than your long-term targets. Is that something that you've made from a strategic standpoint to go ahead and raise that range longer term, or is that just short term, and maybe what are the biggest drivers for this year in particular?
When we're looking on different aspects of our business, of course, the on the one hand, the performing engines of the business where we're continuing to focus on improving, you know, through tools, methodologies, and other aspects in terms of generating better margins. And at the same time, we continue to shift and invest into new growth drivers. So this kind of balancing act continues to happen under the hood. At the same time, we felt that given how we are seeing the improvement of the business cycle in terms of the activity, we are seeing the recurring sales. We've seen some examples through the announcements we've had today of repeat sales in existing customers and other ways in which we can expand slightly the margin, which made us feel comfortable that we can actually increase the range by 20 basis points if you look at the low and the high end. We're not indicating necessarily that this is now a new trend you should expect every year. We're guiding currently for fiscal 2017. But as you've seen in the past, you know, slowly but surely, we're very focused on continuing to invest in the business, generating new growth drivers for the long term, and at the same time, try to improve the margin over time.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Will Power from Baird. Your line is open.
Great, thank you. Yeah, a couple of questions. Maybe just starting on North America, the outlook there. Looked like you had the strongest quarter of the year, I think, here in fiscal Q4. And I think as you laid out some of the 2017 expectations, you know, spoke to strong expectations for rest of world. I think you indicated something along the lines of at least, you know, modest growth in Europe. I'm not sure I caught what you said for North America. So I guess the question is, you know, do you expect North America to continue to grow or to grow year over year in 17? And then I guess within that, you know, how do we think about this Time Warner transaction versus some of the carrier type deals AT&T has done in the past? Because this is a different type of model transaction, I guess, for them. How do you, I mean, are you already seeing impacts? How do you think that's going to impact you all?
So, Will, first of all, in terms of North America, we expect the North America to grow modestly, but to grow. I think there is a good chance that 2017 will be a transition year in North America because, as we indicated before, the projects on the pay TV MSOs front are accelerating, but it takes time to, you know, get to the right speed and the right level. So this is a component we did not have before, and that comes on top of other projects that we have with AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, UCellular, and many, many others. So we expect it to grow modestly. In terms of the new acquisitions that are proposed by AT&T, like the Time Warner, you know, DirecTV already was part of a transition to go into the pay TV and the video consumptions. And we've seen some of these challenges in some of the activities that we have with AT&T under the DirecTV project. And we believe that the Time Warner acquisition is in a way one step farther in the evolution of what we would call today the integrated carrier. So if in the past you would have wireless carriers and then broadband carriers and cabling carriers and so on and so forth, AT&T is a good example that we see actually in many other places in the world of an integrated carrier that are offering many of these services from the same service provider. And we believe that the evolution of this that went into pay TV in AT&T specific case through the DirecTV acquisition, it continues with another step in the same direction. I believe it will be slightly different acquisition. They would not necessarily streamline all back-end systems and so on and so forth, but they provide very interesting opportunities right now to do better job in providing customer experience to the media companies and to that maybe to get into the HBO of the world and the Disney of the world and so on and so forth. Specifically, by the way, Vindicia, the acquisition of Vindicia that we have made in this quarter is targeted exactly to this segment of the market. Their current customers are in this space and I think that it could be very relevant to the transformation of the industry. It's a little bit too early to say, you know, how fast and where it's going to go. But we see it as evolution of the integrated carrier concept that we've seen in other places in the world. Actually, Comcast did the same thing with Universal NBC. Comcast probably will have to decide what they want to do with the wireless strategy as an integrated carrier. So we will see, you know, we think we'll see a higher level of entropy, as I call it, which is a higher level of dynamics, which usually is a good thing for MDOCs, long-term for sure. Short-term, there's always the, you know, the challenges and the concerns, and maybe discretionary expenses will be slowed down. But we are going through these waves of transformation in North America for quite some time, and we think it's overall good for us. We also think it's actually very good for the consumers as well. I have to mention it. You know, the announcement of AT&T with the current asset that they have of $35 for 100 channel, I believe, premium channel is already kind of a disruptive in the market. There are more and more MSOs and carriers will offer stronger and stronger offering on the over-the-top delivery mechanism. So you see more and more activities in this space, and it's along the same line of activities.
Okay, and maybe just a question for tomorrow on the free cash flow outlook for fiscal 17. Should we expect a free cash flow result that's, you know, up a little bit from 16, similar to 16? Any, you know, puts and takes to think about for this next year on that front?
So if you remember, when we were tracking through 3 years of earnings to cash conversion of 120%, I kept saying, guys, this is not sustainable, and reality caught up with my statements, and as you've seen in 2016, we've already seen a lower free cash flow, still very healthy one, but slightly lower than earnings of around $500 million. And in fiscal 17, we expect a similar situation to 16, where we are ramping up many of those transformation project Ellie mentioned that we are Very active, actually a record high level of transformation projects that is a result of very good win rate we've seen in the last year or two years. This is a good investment from our point of view to have, you know, the ability to penetrate and start working with many new logos and ramping up those important transformations. So we see that as a true investment in the future.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ashwin Shirvaikar from Citi. Your line is open.
Hi, Ali. Hi, Tamar.
Hi, Ashwin.
I guess my first question, Ali, you had a comment where you said you have a number of projects moving to production from development phase. You know, this is for transformational projects that you're doing. I guess that leads to a couple of queries. One is, what's the pipeline for new projects to replace the ones that are moving into production? And then the second part is just trying to understand when these transformational large projects move to production, what does that mean for your P&L?
So Ashwin, this is a good question. The first of all, the pipeline for new projects is very healthy. In all dimensions, in all regions, in many, many dimensions. So we hope to keep on keep the high win rate and win new projects. The last couple of years have been very active on winning projects. So I'm mentioning the project's orientation because on one hand it creates pressure and it stretches our delivery organization to the limit and many aspects like this, but on the other hand, this is the foundation of anything else, because usually a successful project leads to other successful projects, and as we are expanding our offering, there are potential other projects that can come after the whatever project we started with. Projects can actually turn to be managed services, and we've seen it in several customers in the last couple of years, and we put more emphasis on that right now. That's another evolution, a natural evolution of projects. And projects usually, when they come to fruition, they don't go to zero. We go from, you know, ramp up of the people to some kind of a ongoing support, a change request mode, and so on and so forth, which is usually quite active by itself. So obviously, the level of people will be reduced by, but the revenue stream will continue to an ongoing and change request and others. In most cases, relatively soon after a project comes to fruition and we go to production, we stabilize the organization, the operation, we have the time to discuss further projects. And these further projects are not necessarily the ones that you have right now in the pipeline, because sometimes there is a result of a dialogue, fruitful dialogue that we have with our customers, and not necessarily the stuff that they have in the bid process and so on and so forth. So altogether, we have record high projects, which is challenging on certain aspect of operation and margins, short term, so on and so forth. Long term, as I said, these are the true pure muscles of the company and actually building foundation for growth in the future. If your question alluded to maybe we can expand the margins further, it really depends on the pace of new project that comes in. If it was only getting into production and stabilizing it, yes, naturally we could have improved that, but I'm not sure that you want us to be in this position. We want to keep on growing with additional project and additional transformations. It's just that I'm mentioning it this time because we accumulated so many of them that it's worthwhile mentioning.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely good with more projects. I guess the second question, and I'm not sure if this is the right forum or if Analyst Day is a better place, but is it possible to talk about what percent of Amdocs revenues is derived from, you know, what I would call traditional telco services, voice data, that kind of stuff, versus the new digital services, you know, cloud, IoT? I noticed you had, you know, increasingly more press releases on financial services, for example. And the reason I'm asking is, does it have a multi-year impact on, because these are value-add services, presumably they might have better margin profile and, you know, younger services, so better growth profile. So I'm kind of wondering about that.
So we don't really have an answer ready for that. We can maybe look at it, but I want to tell you maybe two days or ones that may help you. First of all, I would say don't take it literally, but vast majority of transformations that we have are digital in nature. The driver for the transformation are digital. Whether we'll deliver it with a cloud-based technology or on-prem or on-premise is actually a secondary question, which is not very important. Cloud for us is just a vehicle. It's just a tool, and we use the right tool in the right context. But I would say all the transformation in recent years belongs to the digital era, the digital space, and can be qualified this way. Even if some of the transformation elements underneath this major transformation are traditional telco, just because they need to carry the legacy with them and so on and so forth, the reason, the trigger, the raison d'etre, the reason why we actually have this project is digital. So that's the one data point. And the second one is that in terms of the profitability profile, I actually don't think that there is a specific profile for digital project versus others. It's mainly whether the project and the transformation is new and in process or in progress, or it's in a stable, steady state, business as usual, so to speak, when we mainly do change requests and additional projects and so on. So these are kind of the real different categories of profitability, which goes back to the topic about that we may just mention around projects.
Thank you. And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star and then one now. And in the interest of time, we do ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. And our next question comes from Shaul Eyal from Oppenheimer. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi, good afternoon, Eli, Tamar, and Matt.
Hi.
Hi, Shaul.
Hi. Eli, I want to revisit the four growth engines you brought up in your prepared remarks, digital, pay TV, enterprise, and NFV. Can you provide us with some more color examples about these engines? And again, by no means am I trying to front run your upcoming Analyst Day next month, but just maybe a little bit of more color.
How many hours do you have, Sean? Obviously, it's the deepest topics that we are discussing, and that's one of the reasons we felt that an Analyst Day is really something we're looking forward, because we have actually so much to say. If I need to give you the gist of it, just a summary, digital is everything we do right now. We're talking about many projects around e-commerce, different way to serve customers on the retail front, in other words, in the retail stores and so on and so forth, which is a very different thing. We're talking about, self-service and applications that are downloaded to iPhones and iPads and Android's phone. We're talking about new formats of bills, and we're talking about big data analytics that enhance all of this, and so on and so forth. So it's almost anything we do, but we need to give you more color on specific projects. And basically, we thought about doing it to a real demonstration of the system, real-time system that will demonstrate to the analyst investor that will come to the A-Day. On the enterprise segment, this is a highly complex area. It's a sweet spot for more and more carriers and MSOs. We see projects from North American MSOs all the way to carriers in Europe and in Southeast Asia and alike. So this is global demand. We have some new, really cool set of applications to address this topic. This space was never really well covered by historical providers. So it used to be a lot of Excel and manual work and paper, and we are mechanizing all of it in a relatively beautiful way. And we will demonstrate some of this and tell you some of the projects that we are having there. On the cable and pay TV, we have been talking the last few quarters about the fact that we feel that the North America specifically, but maybe other places as well, are transforming, especially around improving the customer experience, improving NPS scoring, addressing in a different way the customer interaction. And that's what we see. Actually, every quarter that goes by, we are more confident that we are in the midst of this transformation. We hope to be more confident that we are the winners in this space as well. So we will share with you some of the examples of specific projects, but it is happening as we speak, and these are major transformation, multi-year major transformation that are happening or start happening as we speak. And the network function visualization is just the whole new space that we talked about in the last two or three quarters, but it's very hard to explain the depth of what we are doing on audio calls like this. So we need like good engineers. We need a piece of paper and a pencil and to explain some of it, and that's what we are going to do there. Obviously, the lead project is eComp, which is AT&T. Yep. We talked about last quarter, but we see some good signs in other places. I'm telling you, it will, by definition, will be slower than what we would like to have, because it's a huge transformation in the industry, and a lot of companies, especially the Cisco and the Ericsson of the world, will have a lot of interest to slow down. But I think it's inevitable that this transition will happen. We are part of it right now. We are gaining more credibility as we go forward. So the investments are probably this year, a little bit of last year. I think the results will come later. But the topic itself, I hope that we will explain it better, and therefore I hope that you will see the value of it as a growth engine for the years to come. So I could not, again, right now I cannot give you more details with the limitation of time and the media, but I hope it will be better after the analyst day.
No, I appreciate it. Maybe my follow-on question. So today's announcement with the Philippines Globes with their main subsidiary, very encouraging the way I read it on a couple of fronts. First, it suggests additional expansion with an existing customer that was actually added, over the course of the past 18 months, 24 months, if I'm not mistaken. But I think more importantly, I think it's a financial technology capability that you guys are showing here. So I want to ask, was that expansion based on a competitive bid? And if so, who else was competing on the project?
So I can make your life easy on this one, Shaul. Everything that we win is a competitive bid. The days that you can just prove your capability, smile, and give a good price and you get the deal are almost over. So all of this, including this financial services offering to the Globe FinTech subsidiary, have been through a competitive process. And in this space, there are some of them are the usual suspects, like Huawei and Ericsson and others, and some of them are specialists in this specific area. We're definitely very proud that we won it. It's one of the regions that are really exercising financial services combined with mobility, let's call it this way, in the most advanced way. Southeast Asia in general, Indonesia, Philippines, and a few other places. So obviously, to be part of an early adapter exercise of this sort is not only the size of the project, but also the importance of what we are going to learn from this. And this is very important, not only for the size, but also for the type of project that we are talking about.
And any similar opportunities maybe in Europe or in the U.S.? I know different market dynamics, but anything you could also bring to those two additional regions
Front? We are working on it. Once we have something to share, we will. Let's put it this way. We have opportunities similar and somewhat different, but in the same space in our pipeline. So whether it's in these specific regions that you mentioned and which specific environment is a different thing. But that's something that we are proud of.
Got it. No, clearly. Thank you so much, guys. Good luck. Good job.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason Kupferberg from Jefferies. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. This is Ahmed Singh for Jason. Just wanted to ask about the AT&T Time Warner merger again and how that relates to your full year guidance. So if you could provide a little bit more color on how much risk sort of you have baked into this guidance range.
So it's quite simple, zero or close to zero.
Oh, okay.
So specifically to this specific merger. By the way, just to give it the color, we think it will take a long time to get approved because it's could be political more than anything else. And we also believe that in the meantime, they will have difficulties to talk to each other and they need to run the company separately. So even if we have something, it will be relatively minor and will be actually a surprise within FY17. Longer term, it represents opportunities as well.
Yeah, the risk in the short term, as always with such M&As, is that when carriers are thinking about changing their strategic plans, is what happens to existing programs. We didn't see any change. Many things are running naturally in large accounts such as AT&T. But we are being, cautious as always that they may change priorities moving forward. We don't know now how to predict that.
Okay, great. And then just related to that, I know previously you've talked about the AT&T Domain 2.0 and all the work you're doing over there. If this merger were to go through, I mean, do you think anything changes there in the overall AT&T strategy regarding all that work?
Regarding the network virtualization, I don't think so. It's a very complex topic by itself, so it may slow down, take slightly different approach than what we thought maybe X months ago, whatever. So I'm not necessarily saying that domain 2.0 easy or smooth cruising, but specifically the Time Warner are not necessarily going to affect it. If any, there is a chance it will accelerate it, because at the end of the day, we're talking about an ability to take high-end content and deliver it in through several measures and several avenues in a better way to consumers. So that may accelerate the 5G deployment. It may accelerate the fiber optics deployment. It may accelerate virtualization in general, which is the backbone of the network. So I'm not sure it will affect, but if any, I would expect it to accelerate plans like this, not to slow them down.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Tal Liani from Bank of America. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my question. This is Michael Feldman on for Tal Liani. First question, when it comes to your revenue outlook, you're guiding for about 4% growth at the midpoint. And if I look at last year, you grew around the same, but North America was down 7%, and the rest of the world in EMEA was up about 20% or so. Would you be able to provide some color on how that growth contribution should look across the different regions in 2017? And then second, I believe you have a smaller AT&T managed service renewal coming up in 2017. Can you share with us any information on how those talks are going and if the renewal of that agreement is factored into your guidance? Thanks.
As we said previously, we are expecting modest growth in North America. We are expecting in Europe a continued growth, but at a lower pace than the double digit that we've seen in 2016. And in rest of the world, we do expect that to continue and be a growth engine for the company. But after a couple of years of 20-30% growth year over year, we do expect that to start decelerating as well. So overall, we are seeing very, positive indications given the fact that growth is more balanced across the different regions, and at the same time, very happy to see that the growth is happening in all regions. So that's about the regional aspects of the growth. In terms of what we're seeing in terms of managed services deal in AT&T, again, we're not going into any specific deal, nothing material there in terms of renewal process that you guys should be worried about in 2017. There's always ongoing activities of many types and with different buying centers, in definitely in a large account like AT&T. But I don't think there's any material to report in that sense.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sterling Auty from J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Good evening, guys. Two questions. Back to the comment about the transformational deals that are coming to completion. How much flexibility or control do you have on the timing of the start of new projects slotting in right after the completion of some of those versus is there any risk of having any kind of air gaps in any of the quarters here in fiscal 2017?
So, Sterling, we have some flexibility, but it's limited, of course, because at the end of the day, when people ask us to run a transformation project for them, they usually need it as soon as possible. The good thing is that we managed to, on average, to reduce quite significantly the duration of an execution of a given project. If you compare apples to apples, of course, or wireless or multiplay, or OSS project, you need to compare similar projects. But in general, in the last 2 years or 3 years, through improvement of the R&D, through improvement of the methodology, we can shorten overall projects. And we can actually use it partly to also deviate or control the start of the project and the acceleration of the project and so on and so forth. The second thing I want to say is that we need to remember that the project starts with the first major phase of the execution is scoping, which is a very, very delicate phase. And we basically time it in such a way that that will also help us reassign people when they are needed, that they are coming off other projects and they can be deployed in new projects. So we have some flexibility and we're using it all the time. Otherwise, would have to, you know, let go and recruit people on a you know major movements, which is something that is not good for our employees and it's not good for the knowledge and many other things. So you can imagine that over the years we developed a relatively the sophisticated mechanism to predict when we need the people and when we need to accelerate and when we need to reassign people and so on and so forth. So the overall human resource aspect of deploying engineers in different projects became somewhat of an art, but it's also very mechanized and very systematic. So one of the things that we that help us is the beginning of the project that you just mentioned, but there are many other parameters within a project that we can accelerate and decelerate in order to optimize knowledge and capabilities of people that are needed for the different given projects.
Just want to add on that, notwithstanding everything we said on the lumpiness that may happen around projects, that's always true. I think people may have misinterpreted what we try to say regarding the completion of some projects. At the end of the day, when you look at our 12-month backlog, and even assuming that roughly half of the increase in backlog came from the newly acquired companies, it's still a nice uptick that we see in the 12-month backlog that has to do with signing of new projects. So there are things coming up. Some of them are signed, you know, and it's a natural evolution with some projects ramp down as they get to production line and some projects ramp up. On a net basis, we're actually expecting an increase going into fiscal 17. But yet, as Ellie said, there are different moving parts in terms of timing and when things are happening. So I think this is a phenomenon we're seeing every year. It's nothing special about what we're seeing moving forward.
It's like a rolling phenomenon. You know, one project, you know, accelerate, get to fruition, stabilize, go to ongoing and change request mode. The others are coming in and peak at the right time. So overall, you look at the overall, you see something relatively smooth in terms of the deployment of engineers into the project. But in reality, it's a summation of a rolling waves like this that just we are just synchronizing perfectly on or close to perfectly on time, on the time axis. So this is kind of what we are trying to depict in these comments.
That makes sense. And as a follow-up question, is there anything to read into the pricing on the new projects given the, you know, the 20 basis point expansion in the margin guide? Is that suggesting that you've got better pricing, or is it just the mix of projects that you're working on is different this year?
So Sterling, thank you for the question. So the one thing I can assure you, it's not because we managed to get the prices up, and it's a very competitive landscape. We have a very, very healthy win rate in the last couple of years, maybe more. But it's not like competition are gone and therefore we can improve pricing. This is not the case. It's mainly due to the fact that the execution of this project that we just talked about, that we won and are winning, are done better. So we're improving the engineering aspect of the company, from R&D all the way to delivery, all the way to testing, all the way to managed services and many other aspects of it. And this real better execution allow us to do that. It's pure this. It's not the mixture, and it's not the pricing. This is a good indication of the efficiency of the overall company as a construct and of code.
Thank you. And I'm not showing any further questions in our queue. I would now like to turn the conference back over to Matthew Smith for any closing remarks.
Thank you, Crystal, and thank you very much for joining our call this evening and for your continued interest in Amdocs. We look forward to hearing from you in the coming days, and if you do have any additional questions, please give us a call at the Investor Relations Group. With that, have a great evening, and we'll conclude the call. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect. Everyone have a wonderful day.